Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. What a horrible day it is. It gets worse by the day. Each day this administration brings America closer to the brink. One moronic professor after another, destroying America's dignity and past, let alone our safety. Now, I'm going to talk about the horrible, horrible story of illegal aliens bringing a deadly new flu strain into the United States of America. Make no mistake about it. Illegal aliens are carriers of the new strain of human swine avian flu from Mexico. Make no mistake about it. Our incompetence at the CDC will hide this from you. Make no mistake about it. This is a disaster. Now, if you thought Turista was bad, wait until you get human swine avian flu from Mexico. This is the latest zoonotic infection, and I will explain to you, my listeners, on the Savage Nation, what a zoonotic infection is. This is a never-before-seen mixture of swine, human, and avian viruses. It is an influenza A virus. It is real. It is real. It's a knockout punch. The question to me is, there's only one question in my mind, which is this. Is this a terrorist attack? Did these demonic terrorists make a new form of influenza A virus never before seen, which is a mixture of human, swine, and avian viruses mixed together? I don't know. We don't have enough information. But what you do learn today on this program, and I suggest you listen very carefully, you're not going to learn on any other talk show or television show in America. And that is because I have an actual PhD in epidemiology, human nutrition, and medical anthropology from the University of California at Berkeley. Does that make me the world's leading virologist? Not at all. But it certainly makes me aware of what's going on. And I will remind you that in 1986, I published a book called Maximum Immunity, which was translated into 16 languages. So just understand that I'm not a disc jockey with a golf club. There's another big topic, which is the increasing Sovietization of America under the vermin called Democrats. The biggest liar in the history of America is Al Gore. Al Gore was asked to testify today before Congress, and there was a global warming skeptic who was an advisor to Margaret Thatcher who was scheduled to speak at this hearing, and he was blocked by that vermin, Henry Waxman, the man with the spread-out nostrils from sticking his nose in latrines. Waxman said no to any debate on global warming in order to permit this monster, Al Gore, to put out his lies in our Congress. He will be on this show, not Al Gore the liar, but the global warming scientist who debunks Al Gore's lies will join us at the turn of the hour. I want to talk about immigrants and epidemics for a moment on the Savage Nation, because while we can debate global warming, it's not affecting you at all since it's a myth and a lie. However, this new influenza A virus is potentially fatal. I will tell you that right now. There should be no trade and no travel between Mexico and the U.S. If we lived in saner times, the borders would be closed immediately. We wouldn't worry about money. We wouldn't worry about making sure that the heroin addicts get their fixes tomorrow. We wouldn't worry about the fact that stockbrokers in New York won't get their snow tomorrow. What we'd be worried about is the public health. But since we no longer have a public health department in America, since the CDC has long been compromised and has become anything but a public health agency, more like it's no longer a public health agency. Public safety is the last thing on its agenda. The most important thing is the gay agenda and making certain that nobody talks about AIDS. But the CDC now is saying it's too late to contain. They're lying through their rotten skirts. It is never too late to contain an epidemic. Never. If you study the history of epidemics and you know the source of an epidemic, the first thing you do is you cut off any travel to that source of the epidemic. You don't say it's too late to contain it. That makes no sense logically or medically. But this is an example of the broken down America that we're living in. This is a very dangerous infection, and as I say, it is a zoonotic infection. I want to tell you that I began in talk radio in 1994 by creating a radio tape that was in part based upon a book that would not be published by anyone in New York entitled Immigrants and Epidemics. I had at that time had 18 books published, mainly in the health field. My next book would be Immigrants and Epidemics. I was co-authoring it with a leading scientist from the University of California at Berkeley. Nobody would touch it. The publisher said to me, it's too hot to handle. It's too political. It violates all of the rules about what we're allowed to say about immigrants. Ladies and gentlemen, I am warning you. This government is out of control. This government is a thieving, lying group of, I don't know how to control myself today. When I read the New York Times, Wall Street Journal for Thursday, and it says the chairman of the Bank of America, Ken Lewis, testified in February and told prosecutors that former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson and this fraud, ex-Treasury Secretary Paulson, and this bum, Ben Bernanke, ordered him to be silent on the takeover of Merrill Lynch because of fears for the financial system. I am asking myself, how can this country survive? Why are Paulson and Bernanke not indicted? You know, look back at Martha Stewart, Leona Helmsley, Michael Milken. They all went to jail for far less crimes than what apparently has been committed by our current chairman, Mr. Bernanke, and our former Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson. If they did this, then they must be indicted. And I am encouraging New York's Attorney General, Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, to go after them, to go after their jugular vein. This could launch Cuomo into the White House. He could get Paulson by the neck. He could get Bernanke by the neck, and he should throw them to the wolves for what they have done to this country. I am appealing to Mr. Cuomo for his own political future and for the future of America's financial health to go for the jugular vein and rip Paulson out of his estate in Michigan and get Bernanke up there and indict them for what they have done. They have done far more than Martha Stewart, Leona Helmsley, and Michael Milken all together. And why are they not indicted? So there's three stories for you to talk about. Immigrants and epidemics, the emerging epidemic here in America, a mixture of swine, human, and avian viruses, the scandal of Hank Paulson, Benjamin Bernanke, and other stories in the Savage Nation. There is a risk of this pandemic spreading across America. Make no mistake about it, it is coming from Mexico. What is interesting to me is that Mexico has not suffered a serious flu epidemic before, which leads me to ask something that the dingbat running Homeland Security, who is attacking U.S. Marines, returning soldiers, anti-abortion activists, and anti-immigrant activists, why don't you do your job, Napolitano, you bum, you? And why don't you ask yourself, you dumb fool, you, could this be a terrorist attack through Mexico? Could our dear friends in the radical Islamic countries have concocted this virus and planted it in Mexico, knowing that you, Janet Napolitano, would do nothing to stop the flow of human traffic from Mexico, and they are a perfect mule, perfect mules for bringing this virus into America? But you wouldn't think that way, would you? Because you are incapable of protecting America's homeland, Napolitano. Now, let me explain what a zoonotic infection is. Now, they say that it's a mixture between a pig virus and a human virus, a swine and human virus. There's also an element of the avian flu in here. Now, I could understand how a swine flu virus could jump to the human being. I could see how that could happen. Let me review for you before what a zoonotic infection is. It is said that the HIV virus originated in the green monkeys of West Africa. And in some way, the the simian virus that was found in the green monkeys found its way into human beings. I'll let you use your imagination as to how that may have happened. You can take the benign approach or the disgusting approach on that one. You can assume either the humans in that region ate uncooked monkey flesh, or you can assume that they had sexual relations with some of these creatures, and in so doing, the virus jumped from the animal world into the human world. Now, there's a great history of this. The syphilis pandemic that hit the world a long time ago was said to have occurred when the Spanish conquistadors had sexual intercourse with llamas in South America. And in so doing, they then brought this then unknown illness back to Spain, which then spread throughout Europe, through Spain and Europe. That was a result of intercourse between the Spanish conquistadors, who, when they were not busy slaughtering the local natives, apparently were chasing the llamas around the Pampas. And when they caught them, they didn't just domesticate them, if you get the drift of the statement. But as a result of this despicable behavior, which the Bible warns us against, because the Bible is a very intelligent health book, it has many healthful messages in it, and it warns you against having sex with animals. It warns you against having sex between man and man. It warns you about having sex between woman and woman. It warns you about many, many things, the Bible. And it was not written by a bunch of old fools. It was written by very wise, wise men of the Bible. But we'll let that go for the moment. We're teaching you for the moment, or explaining to you, I am, a little bit about what a zoonotic infection is. And now let's come point blank to today. We see a flu in Mexico, spreading into the United States of America, that is a mixture of human, swine, and avian flus. We don't know how it got there. It's a never-before-seen mixture of the swine, human, and avian viruses. It's an influenza A virus, but we don't know whether it was manufactured in a laboratory by one of our dear friends in the Middle East, or, let us say, it just somehow mutated in Mexico. But in either case, if we had a Center for Disease Control, CDC means Centers for Disease Control, not Centers for Disease Propaganda. It is not the CDP, but that's what it has become. It is an incompetent group of morons. The same type of idiots that run Homeland Security run the CDC. In other words, everything they should be doing, they're not doing. They should slam an iron curtain down on the border with Mexico, stop all trade immediately, or this pandemic is liable to spread right into your kindergarten. I'll be right back. Savage. I'm a walking in the rain. Tears are falling and I feel a pain. I wish you were here by me to end this misery. Talking about the new flu strain that is emerging out of Mexico, and our incompetent, corrupt CDC has issued no travel restrictions. Do you hear this? No warnings have been issued about travel to Mexico by our corrupt, incompetent, so-called scientists at the CDC. Yet in Mexico, 6.1 million students were kept out of daycare centers. But in America, the lying thieves in the U.S. government have nothing to say because the bottom line is more important. You cannot stop the flow of people, drugs, and whatever. After all, our commerce depends upon this flow of drugs, so you can't tell people not to go or come from Mexico. This virus has a unique combination of gene segments not seen in people or pigs before. The virus contains human virus, avian virus from North America, and pig viruses from North America, Europe, and Asia. No one's ever seen it before. I ask you a question. Where is the dumb moron, Janet Napolitano, the head of the Homeland Security Department? Why are they not looking into this as a possible terrorist attack on America? Now you say, how could this be? Because the demons in the radical Islamic world have been trying to modify the influenza virus for years. We've been told about this for years. Some of these scientists are very clever. And they also know that because of the open borders policy with Mexico, because of the corruption in our U.S. government, it's very easy to bring a altered virus into Mexico, put it into the general population, have them march across the border. They know the U.S. government is corrupt and incapable of protecting its people. They can't stop anything because they don't want to stop anything. The question is, what are we going to do about this? How do you protect yourself? What can you do? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and I don't give a damn if you don't like what I'm going to say. I'm going to have no contact anywhere with an illegal alien, and that starts in the restaurants. You want intelligence? Stop eating in restaurants where they have undocumented workers in the kitchen. You're risking your life, moron. You want to be a good liberal? Go and have some wonderful food tonight and pay no attention to the kitchen. Go ahead, idiot. Go ahead. Go and eat in the restaurant now with illegal aliens all over the kitchen. And you don't know whether they were in Mexico yesterday or 2 days ago, because your wonderful government doesn't give a rat's behind who's in the kitchen or whether they wipe their behind with their hands. All they care about is that the borders remain open for obvious reasons. No. I'll start with restaurants. That's it. The door slammed shut for me. That's number one. Number two, I will have no illegal alien workers around me. I will not have them in any of my properties. I will not have them anywhere near me. You don't want to take that precaution? Good luck to you, Johnson. Go down to a recruiting center. Go and hug them in the street. Go and kiss them in the street at a recruiting center, along with Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. Ask them to hug an illegal alien for you. You want to use common sense? Those are two things you can do immediately. I'll give you number three. You want number three? Number three is greatly increase your intake of ascorbic acid. That's vitamin C. I don't need the approval of the dummies in the medical profession who want to sell you a drug. They'll tell you there's nothing to do. You know what the CDC told you today? Wash your hands. A $1 trillion agency tells you the way to stop AIDS is put on a condom, and the way to stop the spread of the flu now is wash your hands. You hear this? All the geniuses with MDs, PhDs in the CDC use soap and water. You hear this? This is how far we've come in America. Wash your hands and wear condoms. That's the best advice these schmucks can give you. Now, the reason I tell you to greatly increase your intake of ascorbic acid is because it's well established outside of medical circles, which are useless when it comes to these things. It's well established that ascorbic acid in sufficient dosages improves your immune response to foreign invaders. There are other things you can do.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Of course, we're all alarmed about the fact that illegal aliens are swarming across the border carrying this phenomenally dangerous combination of human swine and avian flu, and our incompetent government is doing nothing, caught flat-footed again. And speaking of our incompetent government here in the Savage Nation, the biggest liar in the history of the world, Al Gore, was invited to Congress today by the lying Democrats to put out his phony propaganda about man-induced global warming. Now, we've heard the lies before. We're actually going through a cooling phase, which we all know. There was another gentleman who was invited to speak to Congress. His name is Lord Christopher Monckton. He was invited to speak today in Congress by Representative Joe Barton of Texas. When he arrived from London, he was told that Representative Henry Waxman, the gentleman with overly large nostrils, has barred him, and would bar him, rather, from appearing today before Congress. Now, we're not living in the ex-Soviet Union, are we? Where only one side is permitted to speak? Or are we now living in the ex-Soviet Union under Chairman Obama? Well, thank God we still have talk radio, because here's the other side of the story. The story that Obama did not want you to hear about the global warming lies. Lord Christopher Monckton is now on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program, my friend. What happened there?
Well, it's a great pleasure to hear you, and it's grand to be in Washington on this lovely sunny day. And the extraordinary thing was that the Republicans, of course, as you know, being the minority elected in Congress, have the right, as representatives of those who elected them and sent them to Congress, to nominate witnesses to testify in front of important congressional commissions, in this case, mm-hmm. the Committee on Energy and Commerce of the House of Representatives, which is considering a bill to close down 83% of the U.S. economy in the name of saving the planet from global warming. Haven't these
now,
people...
Now, Lord Monckton, I must introduce you to my audience. You were the former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, And you were still banned from speaking today alongside Gore?
I was going to be speaking today alongside Gore. The way it happened was that earlier in the week, the Democrats told the Republicans they were going to have an unnamed at that stage celebrity witness appearing on the committee about this bill. And so the Republicans, reasonably enough, as you may think, said that they too would have an unnamed celebrity witness, namely myself. Mm-hmm. And that all went fine until finally the Democrats said, well, our witness is going to be Gore. Who is yours going to be? And the moment they heard it was going to be Monckton, they said, oh, no, we don't want him. We're terrified of him. Can we have somebody else or nobody else? We don't want
what?
At all.
Wait, why are they terrified of you?
I think it's because I've done a little bit of reading about the science, which poor Gore hasn't done. And
yes.
You've just described him as the biggest liar that there ever was. And certainly today in his testimony, I went anyway and sat and listened to him and tried to shake him by the hand, but his goons surrounded him and pushed me away. Not very
really?
Polite either, is he?
Gee, I thought they were going to be the most open Congress in history. I guess this goes along with Chairman Mao Obama's new administration.
I'm afraid it's all very much of a piece. I mean, these people are not lovers of free speech, nor are they lovers of the scientific truth. They listen to the usual rubbish from Al Gore, and it's not as though it was new rubbish. I mean, it's old rubbish that the High Court in London condemned roundly by saying, and I'm going to quote exactly from the judge in the kind of custard-faced voice that they use. The judge said, the Armageddon scenario that he depicts is not based on any scientific view. And that was...
Please tell the American people, Lord Monckton, tell the American people what happened in England when a father who was a truck driver was so offended by the lying propaganda movie that was put out on global warming that he sued. It was taken to the High Court. And didn't they find that they had to run a competitive series of facts alongside the film for the children?
He did, yeah, quite right. It was Stuart Dimmock was his name. He's a very nice man. He was a lorry driver and father of two school-age kids who was absolutely fed up when these kids came home and told him that time and time and time again in their geography classes, their science classes, their environment classes, their green classes, their green week, they were made to watch this same mawkish sci-fi comedy horror movie from Al Gore. And then Dimmock discovered that the United Kingdom government was proposing to give away copies of Gore's movie, which they were paying $20 a time to Gore for, to every school in England so that everybody would be made to watch it all again. And so Dimmock just said, I'm not having this. This is illegal because you're not allowed to circulate political propaganda in schools in England and Wales. It's against the law. I know, because when I worked for Margaret Thatcher, I was one of those who wrote the law. And the idea was precisely to stop this kind of flagrant political tampering with the objective scientific truth. So Dimmock very bravely took his case to the High Court. It's not a cheap thing to do, and it's not an easy thing for an ordinary lorry driver to do. But he very bravely did it and stood up and faced down the British government, and he won his case to the government's astonishment. And the government was ordered by the court to circulate corrective guidance, which, do you know how long it was? It was 77 pages long, putting right the various mistakes the judge had identified in the absurd film that Gore has been making so much money out of. So
Lord Monckton, today Waxman, who is the new Stalinist, he knows that you say there's been no global warming for at least a decade. Is it not true that there's been 7.5 years of global cooling?
It's been 7.5 years since late in 2001. There's been, and it's not just a little bit of cooling, it's rapid global cooling, at least as fast as any similar period of warming in the previous century. It's steep global cooling. Just now, there is near record sea ice extent in the Antarctic. You heard all that bit about the Wilkins ice shelf melting.
Yes.
In fact, the reverse is the case. There is more sea ice extent in the Antarctic now than there's been at almost any time in the last 30 years. And there's more sea ice extent in the Arctic at the moment than there has been at this time of year in the last 10 years.
Oh, you mean the polar bears can now go home?
Sorry, come again?
I'm saying now the poor polar bears that Al Gore used can now go home?
Well, of course, they never went anywhere. They are land-based animals anyway. The polar ice is not their natural habitat. They're all born on the land. They can't be born on the ice.
I'm laughing because you're so filled with facts. I'm laughing as though I'm giddy with hearing the truth. I'm living in a sea of propaganda here. It's unbelievable to me that Congress would say you can't testify.
Well, I found it one of the most extraordinarily disfiguring episodes, whether it was me or anybody else. If the elected minority choose to put forward as their celebrity witness somebody who, on any view, knows a great deal more about the reality of the climate than Al Gore will ever know, and the Democrats, knowing that that is the case, decide they do not want the truth about the climate told so that Gore can have a clear run telling his lies, then I think this is an extraordinarily dark day for democracy, and it is a pointer to what is to come. If you do not stop this kind of behavior by people like Waxman and Morky Markey and all these other characters, Jay Inslee, who sit on that committee as Democrats, if you don't now, everybody, reach for your pens and write to these people and tell them that the First Amendment to your Constitution guarantees the right of free speech, and it is not up to them to turn down the chosen witness of the minority just because they find that that chosen witness might talk the inconvenient truth.
Lord Monckton, you say that the House Democrats didn't want Al Gore humiliated. Were you actually scheduled to refute his points or to speak separately from Gore?
I was going to be speaking in what they do is they call it a panel where you sit together as a group of up to six or seven witnesses, sometimes just one or two. And there would have been Al Gore and there would have been me. And he would probably have gone first and given his usual stuff about how the world's coming to an end and only making Al Gore another $100 million richer can possibly solve the problem. And then I would have said, well, no, because we've had global cooling for 7 years. The CO2 in the atmosphere is rising at only half the rate the UN predicted it would. There are five times as many polar bears now as there were 50 years ago, etc., etc. I would have given them the truth, and I would have said the Waxman-Markey bill is economic suicide as well as...
So what do you suspect that the reason they're pushing global warming down everyone's throats is to grab control of the world economy? Is that your suspicion?
Well, I can put it into words. The words of Valéry Giscard d'Estaing, who was one time Prime Minister of France. And he said 3 years ago that he hoped that the United Nations climate panel would become a fledgling world government. And you can bet that what he meant by world government would not be any kind of democratic government. This is a bid. The global warming thing is a bid by the political class worldwide, and in particular the left-leaning political class, the bureaucrats, the politicians, the Waxmans, the Markeys, the Obamas, to take over control, absolute control, of the way our lives are run. They want to tell us what light bulbs we can have, whether or not we can drive an auto and how far we can drive it, what kind of electricity we can have, whether we have to have a windmill slicing the birds out of the sky, as we now have all over Scotland. They want to be able to micromanage every aspect of our lives with an authoritarian, totalitarian, centralist state. And global.
Oh, my God. I can just imagine what Bertrand Russell or Aldous Huxley would have said about, even though both of them were to the left of center, they were absolutists when it came to freedom of speech. I can't imagine how far we have fallen. Lord Monckton, I understand that after you were banned from speaking, they brought in none other than Newt Gingrich to testify. What in the world did they bring him for? What does he know about global warming? He's not a scientist.
Funnily enough, what he has been doing over the last couple of years is studying it quite closely. I had a long conversation with him when I was last in Washington testifying a month ago. That was before the Democrats realized how dangerous I was to them. They actually let me testify that time.
You mean you did such a superb job of refuting the lies that you were banned from Congress?
Well, I think that's certainly what it smells like. And certainly the Republicans that I met today, they were all chuckling at the hole that the Democrats had dug for themselves, because this has exploded nationally. Everybody's talking about it. It's on all the blog sites. The left.
Yeah, it's on the blogs. Yes, it's on talk radio like the Savage Nation. You're not going to read it in tomorrow's newspaper, which won't even mention your name. But what did Gingrich say today? Did he make any good points?
Gingrich made one outstandingly good point, among a number of very good points. I mean, it was an excellent piece of testimony. But the main thing that he said I think was interesting was that he wanted me and Gore each to put forward our case to all the schools and universities throughout the United States, so that we would each say what we say the facts are, and then we would allow the schools and universities to research which of the two presentations on each of these different facts was closest to the truth. And as Representative Joe Barton said, when this idea was first put to him, I'll tell you who's going to win that one. It's Monckton by a mile.
Lord Monckton, let's deal with the facts for a moment, if we may. The reason the Democrats found Gingrich acceptable is because he's, and I'm sorry to say this, he's tainted goods. He's easily pilloried by the left-wing press. He's been roundly marginalized in the press. While you are a new voice, you speak so eloquently and succinctly, you have great credentials, and you would have wiped the floor up with Al Gore. This way the press can say they brought out that old hack who works for the coal industry, Gingrich. That's why they did it. You know that, and I know that. But for the listeners of this show, of whom there are 8 to 10 million every week, I think it's very important that in the next segment, the moment we come back, we hear from the man that Congress banned, Lord Monckton. Let's go through the facts together. How do we know that there is no anthropocentric warming, meaning man-induced global warming? Can we do that together when we return, Mr. Monckton?
Look forward.
Thank you. Back in a moment.
Savage.
We have a radio exclusive now throughout America on the Savage Nation. Today, the Democrats have fallen to a new low when they banned a global warming skeptic to testify alongside the liar Al Gore at a congressional hearing on so-called global warming. UK's Lord Christopher Monckton, a former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, was scheduled to speak, and when he arrived at the airport, he was told that the House Democrats don't want Gore humiliated, so they slammed the door in his face. Now, the fact of the matter is, this is a very alarming trend, but it's not the first time I've seen this happen under the regime of Commandante Obama. Joining us now, because we still have freedom of speech and talk radio, is Lord Christopher Monckton, who says that this concept of anthropomorphic global warming, meaning man-induced global warming, is rubbish. Welcome back, my friend. Can we go down the list for the average person without a scientific background where you can give them 3 or 4 facts that they can remember in the next time they're confronted with this lie?
Certainly. Why don't we start with whether there is global warming? Isn't that a good place to start? We hear
yes.
All this talk about global warming. Is
yes.
there any?
Yes.
Well, yes, there has been. It began 300 years ago at the end of a period of unusual solar inactivity. The sun had been very cool. There had been no sunspots and therefore much less solar warmth coming to the planet for about 70 years, from 1645 until 1715. That period was known as the Maunder Minimum, after the astronomer who investigated it a couple of centuries later. And it was also known as the Grand Minimum, because during those 70 years, now you need to remember this point, it's quite an important one, the sun was at its least active for 10,000 years.
Oh, my God.
And the Thames in London and the Hudson in New York used to freeze over every winter. They would freeze over right across because it was so cold in the winters. Now, then what happened is the sun began to pick up its activity again, very suddenly, a little flicker in 1700, and then from 1715 onwards, it really began to take off its activity again. And its activity went on climbing and climbing. And within the first 35 years of the 18th century, the temperature in central England, which was the first one to be measured by thermometers, rose by 4 degrees Fahrenheit in 35 years. That is a rate of warming 9 times as fast as the rate of warming in the whole of the 20th century. And that was before the Industrial Revolution began, so it can't have been...
Oh, anything. Let's slow down. That's fantastic. So between 1715 and 1750, the temperature in England rose 4 degrees centigrade, which is a greater increase in temperature than... What were you saying, please?
I'm saying it's not... That rate of increase in temperature over the 35 years, from 1700 to 1735, was 9 times greater than the rate of increase over the whole of the 20th century. So, and that was long before we could have had anything to do with it. The Industrial Revolution hadn't even begun. The CO2 in the atmosphere had not changed. And yet, temperature suddenly went up by 4 degrees Fahrenheit in 35 years.
My
God. It went up by only just over 1 degree Fahrenheit in the whole of the 20th century.
So the temperature of the atmosphere has gone up only 1 degree in the entire 20th century?
1.3, to be exact, I think.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we're not talking about some huge global warming here, but what we are talking about is a warming that began 300 years ago and has continued ever since at an average rate of kind of 1 degree, 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit per century for 300 years, and then
now,
it stopped.
But Lord Monckton, I understand that the sun's activity is again slowing. Is that what's happening, why we're in a global cooling phase?
Quite right, because what happened was that in the last 70 years of the 20th century, there was a solar grand maximum during that period, which centered on the very late 1950s, and about 35 years either side of it. The sun was more active than at almost any time in the last 11,400 years. And that was called the solar grand maximum or grand optimum, when the sun is putting out more heat and keeping us warmer.
And so, when did that come to an end, this heat?
Sorry, and we got a lot of warming.
Yeah, but I'm saying, when did that come to an end, that activity of the sun?
That activity began to come, it peaked in the 1950s and then very gradually tailed off, but it was still very high and therefore was still adding heat to the global system.
So Al Gore misinterpreted the sun's activity as man's activity?
That's right. I mean, a paper by Scafetta and West published just last year says that...
This is too good to be true. Hold on 1 minute. We're going into a break now.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
At a moment of decision. Our home, Earth, is in danger. What is at risk of being destroyed is not the planet itself, of course, but the conditions that have made it hospitable for human beings.
Our dangerous over-reliance on carbon-based fuels is at the core of all three of these challenges, the economic, environmental, and national security crises. We're borrowing money from China.
We're listening to the biggest liar of the century, one of the greatest con men in history, none other than former Vice President Al Gore, who has made a fortune peddling fear and apocalyptic prophecies. And we have on the show the former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, who astonishingly was banned from Congress today by the Stalinist Democrat Party under Obama. He flew in from London. He was supposed to testify and refute Gore today at a hearing on so-called global warming. On arrival at the airport from England yesterday afternoon, The House Democrats said they don't want Gore humiliated, and so they slammed the door of the Capitol in his face. Is this the America that you want to live in? Do you want to live in a world where you can't hear both sides of a discussion? Well, I warn you, under Obama, that is exactly what's happening. In the first hour, we began our discussions with Lord Christopher Monckton. We're going to continue them in a moment. But I want to reiterate that we're also talking about this astonishing emergence of a new human swine avian flu strain from Mexico, with our incompetent bureaucrats in the CDC saying, oh, no, travel is fine, immigration is fine, just wash your hands. The same thing these idiots did with the AIDS epidemic. They told you to use condoms, not to control your impulses. And we're going to get now to the lying in the environmental world. Back with Lord Christopher Monckton, and I suggest you take notes. Lord Monckton, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, it's grand to be back, Michael, and what a terrific show. What a good host you are.
Well, I knew you'd like me. Well, look, here's the thing. I'm very passionate about these subjects for a couple of reasons. I have an actual doctorate in science from the University of California at Berkeley going back to 1978. It doesn't make me a world-class scientist because I don't practice science anymore, but I certainly can read the literature. And you know that the literature does not support this hypothesis of global warming. In fact, the actual scientific evidence supports the opposite, global cooling. And I'd love you to pick up where we left off. You said that from 1645 to 1715, we had global cooling because the sun was at its lowest activity in 10,000 years. And then suddenly around 1700, the sun's activity started again, sunspots, etc., each explosion equal to a multitude of hydrogen bombs. And by the time the pulses reached the Earth, it increased the temperature in the atmosphere by 4 degrees centigrade in 35 years. But your point is this all occurred, the global warming occurred, before the Industrial Revolution, before man emitted so much as a molecule of carbon dioxide outside of his normal breathing.
That's quite right. It was 4 degrees Fahrenheit in 35 years. We must not over-egg the pudding in the way that Al Gore
okay.
does. But yeah.
Okay.
Still a very big increase in a very short time, given that in the whole of the 20th century, in the back end of which we might in theory have had some influence, global temperatures rose in the whole of that century by only 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit. And so what we're looking at is 300 years of global warming between the end of the grand minimum, when the sun was at its most inactive in 10,000 years, and the end of the grand maximum, which more or less coincided with the end of the 20th century, when the sun had risen from its grand minimum up to a grand maximum when it was at its most active in 11,400 years. The biggest increase in solar activity that we're able to infer happened over the last 10,000 years has happened just in these last 300 years. Naturally, we've had 300 years of global warming. And it is precisely because of that fact that most solar physicists attribute the warming that we have seen in the 20th century and in the 19th century and in the 18th century to the sun, because until the last 30 or 40 years of the 20th century, we were not emitting enough CO2 or other greenhouse gases to make any significant difference to the temperature at all on any theory. It just couldn't have been. And that's why, for instance, Caffetta and West, I was talking about just before the break, the authors of a scientific paper published last year, attributed at least two-thirds of the warming of the 20th century to the sun. And there have been many other papers saying that. The Symposium of the International Astronomical Union said the same back in 2004. It said, expect global cooling to come. Then along comes Al Gore with his sci-fi comedy horror movie issued in January 2005 talking about global warming. Do you know what's happened since then? Who was right? Was it the International Astronomical Union? Was it the scientists? Or was it Al Gore? It was the scientists. Since then, we've had 4 years of global cooling at a rate so rapid that if it carried on at the rate we've seen in the last 4 years, we would be in an ice age by 2050.
I wanted to reiterate it. I've said several times on the show, I'm formally trained in botany, and I was an ethnobotanist for many years traveling the South Pacific collecting medicinal plants, and I had to laugh at the absurdity, the notion of a slight increase of carbon dioxide being so damaging, when in fact the exact opposite is true. It was because of the carbon dioxide that permitted plant life to proliferate on the earth and gave man all of this wonderful food that we've been enjoying for these hundreds of years, and that if, God forbid, we saw a decrease in carbon dioxide that was catastrophic and we moved into this global cooling, there'd be massive starvation, wouldn't there?
Well, there would indeed, because, of course, cooling is far, far worse and kills far, far more people than a little bit of warming would. Warming is basically not going to kill anyone much, but cooling is very dangerous because, in fact, you're quite right. I mean, as a botanist, you'll know this well, particularly as medical botany is what floats your boat. I mean, the point here is that CO2 is absolutely essential to all plant life.
I know we should generate a little more carbon dioxide, but, you know, let's talk about facts. I'm also an avid boater, and I've looked at tide charts going back a very long period of time here in San Francisco Bay. I have not seen a millimeter of change in the sea level. Is there any evidence of a rising sea level along the lines of Al Gore's catastrophic theories that New York City will soon be underwater?
No, all of that is rubbish. He said it again today. He said, look, it's going to rise 20 feet. But that's when the judge brought him up short and said, no, the Armageddon scenario that he depicts is not based on any scientific view. Sea level, as best we can make it out, and I got this from the world's greatest expert on this, Professor Niklas Murner, who's been researching this for 35 years. He does nothing but sea level. He's written 520 scientific papers on the subject, and he says that in the last century, the 20th century, sea level rose by, get this, not 8 feet, not 4 feet, not 2 feet, not 1 foot, but 8 inches, maybe. Not even as much as that, probably.
Wait, 8 inches over the last 100 years?
Yep, over 100 years it went up by just 8 inches. Not 8 inches a year.
Well, wait a minute. So Gore may have something here. If we live 1,000 more years, all of us, we may see a rise of 2 feet.
Well, the very worst that could happen, according to the UN's climate panel, and these people are basically bedwetters trying to justify their own existence, so they'll kind of sex it up as best they can, but they can't make out a maximum of more than 2 feet in the whole of the 21st century. But what's actually happening is that sea level has stopped rising altogether. Al Gore didn't mention that today, and you won't have heard that in your newspaper or on your CNN or on your MSNBC. They will somehow not have bothered to tell you that in the last 3 years there has been no statistically significant rise in sea level at all. It has stopped.
Lord Monckton, let's talk about the politics of this, because you've raised a very important point, and it goes to the heart of this. You were banned by Stalinist Democrats from even speaking and presenting your facts, which is very worrisome. But why is it that extreme leftists embrace global warming while the entire conservative intelligentsia understands it as a big lie? Why has this broken down along political lines? And moreover, the second part of the question is, in the UK at least, where I think there's a chance for a little more open-mindedness, I could be mistaken, are there any liberal so-called or labor scientists who agree with you?
There are very few on the political left who are willing to say that they agree. There are many who of course know perfectly well that the science behind this is to use a technical term, bollocks. Am I allowed to say that on the air? Well, too late. I've said it now.
oh, yes. They don't know what it means here in America, so it's perfectly safe.
I'll probably get away with that one then.
No, no. The FCC is filled with so many dummies, they wouldn't even know where to look to find what the word means.
They can look it up under cojones then.
They can look it up. It's next to coprolites, I think.
Something like that. Anyway, it's basically rubbish. And most scientists know that it's rubbish. Very few scientists dare to say that it's rubbish because the left is ruthlessly in control of the academic world and the universities. And anyone who dares to say, just a moment, none of this adds up, it's all nonsense, they get penalized, they get moved to ever smaller offices with no daylight.
Oh, my God, it's right out of the ex-Soviet Union.
It's just like that. I can tell you of a colleague of mine who is working at one of your most eminent institutions. I won't name it or him. It would be unkind to them both. But he has been moved successively in the last 5 years to ever smaller offices. They've been trying to get rid of him, but they can't because he is independently funded. And also because I've written to them and saying if they do remove him, I will go public and say who they are and who he is.
Unbelievable.
And this is happening all over America.
So the evidence against global warming is, one, temperatures are actually decreasing, not increasing. The level of sea level rise has actually stopped completely. What is the other evidence, sir?
Slowly. Likewise, the amount of carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere is only half what these wretched Xbox 360s and PlayStations that these scientists use predict it will be. You know, they have these so-called computer models on which the entire case for this climate alarm is built. And the computer models say there ought to be twice as much CO2 staying in the atmosphere as there is. But it's all being taken out. And you know, as a botanist, it's being taken out by trees and plants. It's being taken out by to form the shells of ocean creatures. It's being taken out in huge quantities by what we call the biosphere and the hydrosphere. And that's why it isn't accumulating at the rate that the UN would like it to be accumulating, so as to justify the continued existence of its climate panel as the new world government. But the fact is that CO2 is rising at far less, about half the rate the UN predicts, and the UN admits that it can't explain why the CO2 isn't rising as fast as it wants it to rise. So,
you know, it's interesting. I had the president of Czechoslovakia on the show 2 years ago, totally on board with the realities of the situation. You're an eminent scientist. You know what's going on. Thousands of reputable scientists say that Al Gore is a liar. And yet the American newspapers and media continue to pump out the big lie. And of course, this is tied into the emerging New World Order, one world government, where they have us all in the grips of a panic and control us with the big lie. But here we have Obama now wanting to control our light bulbs and flushing of water, for God's sakes, under, the same guys that unless we control our use of energy, CO2 levels will rise and the world will come to an end. How do they get away with this?
They get away with it because the political class, which includes a lot of the media, you know, these are political animals whose first allegiance is to the international left and not to the truth. They will drift along with this because it's convenient or because they too would be threatened with the sack. I recently, for instance, tried to publish quite a detailed and quite learned and very well-referenced article, you know, with all the graphs and charts and scientific papers quoted and cited and listed and the page numbers and everything in the Journal of the Chartered Insurance Institute of London. And when the editors of the journal read the article, which they had asked me and an eminent member of the insurance industry to write jointly, they said they didn't want to publish it because they had signed up to a climate action partnership or some damn fool organization like this, which believed in the whole nonsense. And so I said, you've got two choices now. You either publish in full the article you commissioned, and which we have written, and which is of very good quality and sets out the science extremely
well. Where can we get this article, Lord Monckton?
It is now published, because I said that if they didn't do it, I would have the entire thing read into the record of the U.S. Senate and the House of Lords in the U.K. with a rider to the effect that the editors had tried to...
Okay, we have to go to a commercial break or I will be out of business. We're going to come back for one more segment. I thought this would be 3 minutes long. It started almost an hour ago. But it's very rare that we get someone as succinct and as literate and as passionate and as humorous, I may say, as Lord Christopher Monckton, the man who Obama banned from Congress today. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The new Stalinist regime under Obama banned Lord Monckton today from refuting the liar Al Gore in order to make certain that this global warming fiction be promulgated and pushed down your throat. We are entering a very dangerous phase in Western civilization, which I never thought I would see. I certainly see it coming only from the Democrat side. They will not permit any debate whatsoever on a subject that they want to control.
And so, therefore, I had Lord Monckton thus far on the Savage Nation. He has to leave us in less than a minute. I must put out his website. Lord Monckton, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Very good to be with you. And
now, how can the people learn more about yourself and your work? What is the website again?
Right, it's www.scienceandpublicpolicy.org. And if you want to come and hear me speak on this subject in Washington on June the 2nd, www.heartland.org is organizing a conference, a one-day conference, in which leading scientists from all around the world will be giving contributions on different aspects of the science that you, Michael, and I have been talking about over the last hour.
And of course, that won't make it to CNN. Larry King wouldn't permit that to be on his show, of course.
Somehow I don't think they'll be giving it, but if you want to come, that will be a really good chance to meet some of the world's top scientists. We're talking about tenured professors, leading researchers.
But I want my listeners to follow your work at scienceandpublicpolicy.org. Lord Monckton, God bless you. We're going to have you on regularly here on the Savage Nation. Great job, sir.
Savage.
Well, that was an incredible interview with Lord Monckton, the man that Obama refused to permit in Congress today. It's astounding that you're not seeing what's going on in the country, how we're increasingly becoming like the ex-Soviet Union. You have a martinet for a president who cons people into believing he's open-minded when he is the opposite. You have a fanatic in the form of Waxman, whose face literally is the portrait of Dorian Gray, whose nostrils reflect, no doubt, his porkish behavior, who says that you as a skeptic cannot appear before Congress today, even though you flew all the way from England and were scheduled to speak, because we don't want to embarrass Don Al Gorleone. Don Gorleone has one of the greatest cons going, something organized crime could only dream about, and that is because he absolutely has a lock grip on the fools in the media. Well, fortunately for you, you listened to the Savage Nation where you heard an alternative opinion, and I hope that you will put aside your biases against me, and I hope you will have learned something from Lord Christopher Monckton with regard to the lie about global warming. We are actually in a global cooling phase. I now want to turn my attention back to what I began with, which is immigrants and epidemics. And I told you that this new form of influenza A virus coming out of Mexico, which is a combination of human, swine, and avian flu strains, could be, and I say could be, a terrorist attack upon America. And that is because of the lack of border controls. That's because we have Janet Napolitano at Homeland Security. That's because we have a moron running the CDC. They're telling you now the most you should do to protect yourself against this flu is to wash your hands. It's the same incompetence we saw with the outbreak of the AIDS epidemic when they told you not to alter your behavior but to use condoms. And so I tell you again, you have the power in your own hands to do certain things to protect yourself from this emerging flu epidemic. The first thing is, and I don't care how politically incorrect this is, it's whether your health matters to you or not. I really don't care whether you like what I'm to say to you. I don't care whether you like it or not. Use common sense. I realize that unto itself is a revolutionary statement in a time when there is no common sense. But because I am a man of a certain age who grew up at another time and can still think, I'm going to give you some commonsensical things you can do during a time of epidemics. Because it's been done going back to the first flu pandemic of 1918, which wiped out a good portion of the earth, of the earth's population. Number one, you want to start with common sense that your mother would have told you, or your father would have told you? Stay away from crowds. Number two, you're eating in a restaurant? You better make certain that the people working in the kitchen are not illegal aliens, because if they are, you're running a very high risk of the flu virus being transmitted to you. I don't care what anyone tells you. I'm telling you the emiss on this. That's the way it is. I don't care what this rotten, lying, thieving government tells you. I'm giving you the truth. Now, a government that is set up to protect the people would slam the border shut with Mexico. If we didn't have a moron running Homeland Security, that border would be locked down until they get a grip on what this is. But because we have nothing but incompetent bureaucrats running everything, they can't even protect us from this emerging virus. They can't protect you from anything. They couldn't protect you from a radiological device. If they knew it was about to go off, they'd have to consult a 10,000-page manual. And so you have to take precautions yourself. There are other commonsensical things you can do, and I think you can pretty much figure them out yourself. Now, with regard to your own internal immune system, very complicated. B cells you've heard of, T cells you've heard of, macrophages, antibodies, complement, thymus, bone marrow, lymph nodes, spleen, the tonsils, the appendix, and the interferons that are produced by your cells themselves. Maybe you've heard some of these words over the years, maybe you haven't. But I want to remind you that I wrote one of the groundbreaking books, popular books in the field, called Maximum Immunity, back in, what year was this, 1986, published by Houghton Mifflin Company. It was published in 16 languages. I don't need the approval of flatulent Larry King. I don't need the approval of flatulent Larry King or Katie Coran to put a kosher stamp on it. 16 languages is good enough for me. So I know a little bit about the immune system. I'm not a virologist, nor am I an immunologist, but I have common sense, and I also know a little bit about the immunity connection and how you can raise your IQ, your immunity quotient. And the first thing I would recommend to you is watch out where you associate, watch out with whom you associate. Don't shake anybody's hands. I mean, you may sound that's crazy. The Chinese have known this going back to the age of the plague. That's why the Chinese generally didn't shake hands. It's a very wise thing to do. No more handshaking. Do I have to give you the other commonsensical things that people have forgotten over the years? Now let us go to the food supply itself. God only knows, only God can help us. Because of NAFTA and open borders, we have no idea who touched the food that you're going to consume. I would therefore be very, very careful of any raw foods. I wouldn't eat any raw foods. Point blank, I would not eat any raw foods. I would cook everything and make certain it's cooked thoroughly before I eat it. I don't have to go into pork itself. Let's put that on the side. I wouldn't think you have to think about that too many different times. Now, they're saying that this virus mutated from pigs and was transmitted to humans. I'm not so sure that is true. There is certainly a possibility that our dear friends in the Middle East cooked this up in a laboratory somewhere in a cave and brought it into Mexico, knowing that our incompetent government would not protect us from this epidemic because of open borders policies. And so I say you better be very, very careful. Now, let's go to the next few things that I would recommend that you start thinking about. Most of the intelligent people in America have been taking vitamins and minerals and such for at least 30 years. Now, forget what the hacks, the drug pushers called medical doctors, the drug pushers tell you. Certainly, there's a place for drugs once you're sick. But I certainly would recommend that you bolster your immune system by using the commonsensical devices that you've been using for years. I raised my children on the Linus Pauling, Ewan Cameron theories, which are greatly proven by the great numbers of people who have used these theories to their advantage in using mega doses of vitamin C and other vitamins. I do not care what the hacks at the Mayo Clinic say. They are worthless. They're all party boys and party girls. If a vitamin works, they try to disprove it in order to make certain that you only go to your drug pusher, your MD, who makes certain that you buy another medication put out by the medical pharmaceutical establishment, you know, approved by the government, so to speak. So again, as I say to you, there are many things that you can do to increase your resistance to a virus. Does it mean that you're definitely going to protect yourself? Absolutely not. But I strongly recommend that if you fear any exposure to this or any other virus, and you see some of these symptoms coming on, first of all, you got to understand there's no medicine to treat a viral illness like this. If a doctor tells you to take an antibiotic, you ought to sue your doctor. It's the first sign of a quack. If he treats a viral illness with an antibiotic, which was designed to treat a bacterial illness. So understand that if he tells you to go home and just drink liquids, he's another quack. Okay? Another quack. What you have to do is stimulate your immune system. You've got to stimulate your T cells. And you've got to do so in the only ways that we know how. And that is through proper diet. Moderate, and I repeat, very moderate exercise, and you've got to take much more vitamin C that you've been taking. Now, just taking a pill with 30 milligrams, the amount you find in an orange, is absolutely criminal. It is insufficient. The so-called RDA is a joke. The RDAs are minimums, not optimal amounts. I would suggest that you take what I've been taking, and I'm not selling any vitamins right now. Maybe I should have, but I don't. I've avoided that all of my life. I've never put out a line of vitamins for you. Maybe one day I won't. But I would suggest that you get vitamin C powder. And the reason I say powder is because most of the vitamin C pills are useless garbage. You may as well inhale talcum powder for what's in most of these vitamin pills. And the good test of a sufficient amount of vitamin C or ascorbic acid I will give you. It was developed by my very dear friend, who died last year, by the way. He was a great friend of mine and a mentor of mine for 30 years. Bob Cathcart, Dr. Bob Cathcart, medical doctor, worked out of Los Altos, California. Great man. And the Cathcart hypothesis of vitamin C usage is something that the medical establishment sadly has rejected. But Bob treated over 25,000 people with viral illnesses and some very severe viral illnesses, all with very, very good success. And he developed what was called the bowel tolerance hypothesis of vitamin C use. Now, what does that mean? Here's what it means. When you're healthy, you can take a very small amount of vitamin C before you develop any bowel intolerance, meaning flatulence or gas. And so let's say you're a healthy person and you're taking 500 milligrams a day, a half a gram. And then you raise it up to a gram, you'll start to see that at a certain point, you're going to develop symptoms of gas. That's the point at which you stop taking the vitamin C. And you maintain it at that level. So let's say it's at 500 milligrams. Any more than that, you get gas, so take the 500 milligrams a day. But at the first signs of not feeling good, and I've helped many people in my life using this, and they're all astounded by it every time. They say, oh, Mike, how come that worked? Gee, I tried vitamin C before. Well, that's, of course, because they were taking vitamin C tablets, which contained virtually useless amounts of vitamin C, and they weren't taking sufficient amounts for it to have any medical effect whatsoever. So at the first sign of, let's say, the sniffles, even if it's a cold, what you do is you start to slowly increase the amount of vitamin C you're taking. That's why I say use powder. And so you go from, let's say, a standard amount of a gram a day, which is what I use, which is 1,000 milligrams every day for the last 35 years, and you start to increase it 2 grams, 3 grams, 4 grams. Now, how much is 4 grams of vitamin C? You take a teaspoon, put it into the jug of vitamin C powder. It's a flat teaspoonful. Is about 4 grams. Now, I said flat, I mean flat. I don't mean heaping. I mean a flat teaspoonful is a lot of vitamin C. It's 4 grams. But it's not a lot if you're sick. You will find that if you took that teaspoonful, that flat teaspoonful of vitamin C when you're healthy, you'd get diarrhea because your body would be kicking it out of your bowel. It doesn't need it. It doesn't want it. It rejects it. But you'll find that the first symptoms of a cold or a flu that you can probably take 4 grams every 2 hours, if not more. And you'll find out that you can take it without developing any bowel intolerance. That is, you're not going to get flatulence, you're not going to get diarrhea, because your body is using every molecule of ascorbic acid in order to marshal your own defenses against the invading virus in that case. And so, again, we come back to this flu epidemic that is now surfacing in Mexico and has appeared in California and Texas amongst the immigrant community, which, of course, the government will hush up and cover up, because right now Obama is putting the ink on a plan to legalize 30 million illegal aliens. This is God's hand, by the way. This is God trying to save America from this demonic desire to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. There must be a unified stance against this attempt to steamroll us on what we all know to be a national suicide. And if this epidemic is not sufficient cause for alarm, then I would say we do not deserve a nation. The fact of the matter is, I entered talk radio 15 years ago by putting together a tape with made-up shows, and one of the topics was immigrants and epidemics, where I tried to warn America about emerging epidemics that were coming into America then. And at that time, it was the emerging epidemic of tuberculosis, which was reemerging in America. Remember, TB had been wiped out in this country. It was almost gone. And then with the arrival in America from the arrival into our nation of the boat people from Vietnam, who were unfortunately unfortunately, carrying an awful lot of tuberculosis. TB hit America right between the eyes just when the HIV virus was emerging in America, and many homosexual men who had their immune systems compromised through the acquisition of HIV developed tuberculosis. And so TB then reemerged in the United States of America at that time. Coupled with this is you had immigrants coming in from Africa and from other regions of Asia where TB is endemic. And again, not being screened the way your grandparents or great-grandparents had been screened, again, we had epidemics emerging in this country. Right now in America, in the regions of San Francisco, for example, there is an incidence of tuberculosis that's higher than that of Africa. And that's because of the policies, the failed policies of the schmucks like Gavin Newsom, who run the city and cover up every crime committed by an illegal alien, whether it be outright homicide or the homicide against the nation of an epidemic like this being covered up again by the Obama administration and the fools at the CDC. This is Michael Savage giving you the best information you're ever going to get in the media, and I'll be right back. Savage. Talking about the complete breakdown in America's borders, the complete breakdown at the CDC, we are talking about this very worrisome flu, a strain of a new flu strain. They say it's a mixture of avian flu, swine flu, and human flu. And I keep raising the issue of where did it come from? Where did it come from? Did it emerge by itself, or did our dear friends in the Middle East concoct it somewhere in a laboratory and bring it over, knowing that we have a corrupt government? Where they could literally walk it across the border. It's certainly a viable question in a time of terrorism, isn't it? But then again, since it didn't concern white returning military men, people in the anti-abortion movement or anti-immigration movement, I suppose the Homeland Security is not focused on this. They're focused only on returning veterans. But the fact of the matter is, be worried, be very, very worried indeed. And use common sense, for God's sakes. They're not even going to tell you the things they're telling the people in Mexico. To the credit of the Mexican government, they have canceled classes. They've told people not to go to concerts. But the liars and thieves in our own government won't even tell you that much. They won't even tell you to stop going to a concert. They won't even tell you what the Mexican government is telling the peasants of Mexico. You want to hear what Mexico's government is saying? Something that our incompetent vermin aren't telling you? Mexican's government is telling people the following. Don't shake hands, don't kiss when greeting, don't share food, don't share glasses, don't share cutlery. Your CDC won't even tell you that. All they're telling you to is wash your hands. I don't know if you know that the flu virus can be spread on the hands, so don't shake any hands. What you do is when someone extends the hand, just put your hand against your other hand like you saw in the ancient Chinese times and say, it's not in my culture. You don't have to say I'm afraid of the disease. Just say it's not in my culture. Just let it go with that. One pharmacy in Mexico ran out of surgical masks because people are smart enough in Mexico. They're smarter than we are here. They're smart enough to understand the commonsensical things that you can do to take some control over your life. There is a positive note, however, that I want, and I'd feel remiss if I didn't tell you this. According to the World Health Organization, and I don't know whether to trust them or not, this virus appears to be susceptible to Roche AG's flu drug Tamiflu. It's not susceptible to older flu drugs such as amantadine. And so, again, there is hope on the horizon in the sense that the virus is susceptible, apparently, to Roche AG's flu drug Tamiflu. And Mexico has enough antiviral drugs to combat the outbreak for the moment. God only knows if they'll have enough if it spreads. But the fact of the matter is, this is a potential pandemic, which is a global epidemic of a new and deadly disease such as the flu. And yet, we're being told by the liars in the CDC that they won't even recommend not traveling to Mexico. To show you how far we have fallen as a nation, and to show you how politicized these doctors are at the CDC, the same people who permitted the AIDS epidemic to spread by not putting out proper precautions for fear of offending the homosexual activists, now they fear offending the immigration activists, the illegal immigration activists, such as those working for Obama, and they won't even tell you a commonsensical thing, which is don't travel to Mexico. Oh, no, there's no reason not to travel to Mexico. Go, you go to Mexico. Just make sure you wash your hands. That's your government at work. And so today, thus far, I have given you the truth about global warming, which is that it's a fiction and we're actually in global cooling. And I've tried to explain to you that the new flu strain that is erupting in Mexico and has now come into the United States in the illegal immigration community must be guarded against. I've given you some commonsensical things you must do. And I hope, therefore, that irrespective of your politics, you'll put your brain in action and you'll do the right thing to protect your children.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Thus far, I have had on this program Lord Christopher Monckton, the former science advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, who had flown in from London to testify in Congress and refute Al Gore the liar on the myth of global warming. He was blocked by the Obama administration. We are now living in Stalinist America, the USS of A, where apparently only the inconvenient lies of Obama will be permitted to be promulgated by the administration and through their lackeys in the media. We had him on for over an hour. It was a wonderful, incredibly invigorating discussion about the myth of global warming. Perhaps we'll replay it next week. Perhaps I'll get a piece of it up over the weekend. I will on michaelsavage.com because I think you're going to want to hear it. We then turned back to the epidemic that's emerging out of Mexico. This weird combo of swine, human, and avian viruses and influenza A virus, a new strain never seen before. And I gave you commonsensical things you could do to protect yourself, things that the Mexican government is telling the people that our swinish medical establishment here in this country won't even tell you. The swinish CDC is telling you to use soap and water, just as they told you to use condoms and continue to go to bathhouses. They are the road to death, the road to disaster. In Mexico, they're keeping their children out of school. In Mexico, they're closing down concerts. In Mexico, they're telling the people not to shake hands, not to kiss, not to share cutlery, not to share glasses. They won't even tell you that here. Why won't they tell you that here? Because we actually have a citizenry that is apparently lower in education value than the average Mexican, believe it or not. And if you care to comment on the epidemic or on the epidemic of lies coming out of Al Gore and Congress, you can call the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin right here in San Francisco, in my home city on KNEW. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, Dan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, good to talk to you. It's been tough listening to all this, and it's been really tough listening to this all day. It's funny, we had to listen to 8 years of neocons, and now we have the neo-fascist in power. It's unbelievable. This guy, Lord Monckton, he's a smart cookie, there's no doubt about it. He is telling the truth, and he is blocked from Congress. This is unbelievable what these people are up to.
Well, now, look, he was blocked. He flew in from London, and then he was told he can't speak because he might embarrass Al Gore. Now, think about a government that won't permit two sides of a discussion. Think about what country you're living in now.
Yeah, it's odd.
But now you know why Nancy Pelosi has a bullseye on the Savage Nation. Now you know why Al Gore Leone has a bullseye on talk radio. Now you know why Dianne Feinstein has a bullseye on talk radio. We are the last link of truth in this country. Make no mistake about it. I want to raise the issue I raised in the last hour because I may be the first, but I won't be the last to raise it. How can you be certain that this flu strain was not created by Al-Qaeda? Why is there no discussion of this? Just because that dumb moron, Janet Napolitano, isn't saying it, you can't use common sense? They have been trying to modify the flu virus for ages, our dear friends in the Middle East, our holy friends in the Middle East. And speaking of our holy, wonderful friends in the Middle East, who we're all supposed to bow down to, I saw a movie last night. I'm going to sidetrack for a minute. I highly recommend this movie. I saw a movie done in 2008 called Traitor. I was stunned at how well done it was, and I try to ask myself, why did this movie die? The lead character is played by Don Cheadle, an African-American actor who is as good as they get. Now, the only reason this movie didn't go anywhere is because I think it blows the whistle on the invasion of the radical Islamists into this country. I think that the plot is so believable and so uncompromising in its whistleblowing on how deeply this country has been penetrated by the Al-Qaeda types. In fact, in this movie, they show an FBI agent who's a Muslim American, clean cut, very collegey, who's actually an Al-Qaeda plant inside the FBI, who, when the FBI actually finds out where one of the wanted terrorists is, he blows the whistle to the terrorist right from a cell phone outside the FBI. Now, you understand why Obama wouldn't want such a movie to be shown in America, wouldn't you? You can understand why Janet Napolitano wouldn't want you to start asking questions about things like this. But I really recommend that you try to see this movie, Traitor, 2008. Again, the star is an African-American actor named Don Cheadle. I mean, look, he's a great actor, by the way, and extremely believable because he's not one of these smiling type of actors. In fact, his face is one of these very serious frowning type of faces. And he turns out to be a former U.S. Special Ops Officer, Samir Horn, who is an African-American from Chicago, who converted to Islam, who, it turns out, is a good guy, but he looks like a bad guy. And the FBI tries to turn on him, thinking he's really a bad guy when he's a good guy. But it's really well done. There's only like two or three lines in it that are PC lines about, you know, Christianity also having violence in it. They added that in at the end. But it's a fabulous movie. And if you could put up with two or three, PC lines, the movie's really well worth seeing. One other point about the movie is the acting is very, very rich. The characters are very memorable. And the music score is original. Respect is paid to traditional Islam as opposed to its radical splinter, which is very important. And Cheadle's character is fabulous. He delivers a moving portrait of a man who's tormented, who had a traumatic past in the military in seeing deaths when he was working in Afghanistan, and how his heart leads him is a very interesting story. I recommend it again. And one of the quotes from the movie is, "The truth is complicated, as is this film, Traitor." And there's no sex in it, which is, I guess, why the vermin of Hollywood didn't distribute it widely. It was a very expensive production. I don't even know how it got made. Crime, drama, thriller, Traitor 2008. Star is Cheadle. Go see it, rent it, whatever. New York City, WOR, Lou, quickly, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, wasn't there an Al-Qaeda cell recently where a bunch of guys died trying to duplicate the bubonic plague, or maybe not?
Well, that's what we were told, but who knows what the government tells us, what is true and what's false.
Yeah, but I think it was somewhere, either Tunisia or some, I forget exactly where. But
yeah, let's not forget how intelligent the Semitic mind is. And unfortunately, when the Semitic mind goes bad, it can be very bad indeed. Thank you for the call. These are not people looking for a Nobel Prize in saving human lives. They didn't grow up on the Torah, where it says if you save a single life, it is though you have saved the entire world. These psychotics in Al-Qaeda may be just as brilliant as some of our most brilliant medical scientists, but instead they spend their every waking minute and waste their heritage trying to kill as many people as possible in the name of their splinter view of Islam. Philadelphia, Susan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you for taking my call, and I appreciate all the information you put out. It's
thank you.
So hard for me to work these days. I work at the Philadelphia School District, and I work amongst all Obama followers. And
oh, sure. That's right. The wonderful people that Obama loves.
That I can, you know, identify with, that understands what's really going on. I mean, I bust every day. It's so hard. Because they're like walking zombies. You can't talk to these people.
No,
I mean,
that's right. They don't know how to reason. They don't understand what reason is. In fact, the man described hell as a place where there is no reason. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, I also want to comment on Lord, what's his name? He was wonderful. Information.
The man that was banned by Obama today from testifying before Congress. We were the first to get him on the Savage Nation.
Common sense tells you, Michael, like in the last...
Right, the man told you we're in a phase of global cooling. No wonder they didn't want him there in Congress. Thanks for the call. By the way, talking about common sense, I have to tell you that my book, Healing Children Naturally, is a must for every young parent. I'm not suggesting you buy it to protect yourself against the flu. Don't get me wrong. But I am suggesting that you look into it instead of drugging your child or feeding him poison. Buy the book. It's only available on michaelsavage.com. Dayton, Ohio. Drew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on the fact that by Congress not allowing your earlier guest to speak, they're kind of pulling a double standard in the fact they want to impose the fairness doctrine on individuals like yourself, and they're basically...
That's right. Why do you think they want to turn Michael Savage off? I'm the one who blew the whistle on Dianne Feinstein's $25 billion gift to the FDIC of your taxpayer money. She's one of the leading proponents of killing talk radio. Of course they want to shut me up.
Yes, they do. And I just think it's funny how they want to force this upon, you know, talk radio and all the outlets that individuals like yourself could have while they themselves are not willing to, subject themselves to the same thing.
That's because they are fascists. Call them Stalinist, fascist, whatever you want. The face of fascism can be seen no better than in the distorted portrait of Dorian Gray, and that is Henry Waxman, who today banned this speaker from Congress. Take a look at Waxman's nostrils, and you'll know where his nose has been. I'll be right back. When this country is melting down so rapidly, it's very hard to contain myself every day. I mean, you look at what they're doing to the CIA. You see a bunch of degenerate vermin in the ACLU who now have more power over our security than do the professionals who risk their lives in the CIA. I don't think you understand that the ACLU and Obama are one and the same. Obama had the option to not release those CIA memos. He also has the option not to release the pictures, but he chose to cater to the ACLU, who is now running America's national security. And I remind you, if God forbid we are ever hit by another terrorist attack, and God only knows if we are not already in the midst of one in this new flu strain that no one knows what it is, where it came from, you can blame your friends at the ACLU for killing you, because they may as well be killing you. They are traitors through and through. They hate this country. And so far as I know, they've been penetrated by Al-Qaeda. And let me repeat that. Why should you assume for a minute that Al-Qaeda has Al-Qaeda operatives did not shave their beards or send women over to work for the ACLU, to work for various agencies in this country like Homeland Security and the FBI? Why should you assume it? If script writers can see it, why can't you see it? And if you were them, why would you attack America right now? You keep saying, well, Obama is so weak. Why don't they attack? Why should they attack when they're getting so far without attacking? Why would you attack a country that's already in your hands in so many ways? And you see it melting down. You see it's on its knees. You see a president apologizing around the world for the sins of America. You see a president kissing a king's hand and bowing to him. Why would you attack such a country? You just let it slowly degenerate, particularly when you have so many plants inside organizations and inside the ACLU and a supine Congress. That's one man's opinion. That's one man's opinion. That's one man's opinion. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com has so many stories, I don't know where to begin. I want to go to the callers. WOR, Patrick, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, thank you. I just wanted to report that the Mexican virus has touched New York City on quite a large scale. My niece goes to a very large high school where the students just came back from spring break from guess where? Mexico. And today over 500 students were out sick.
Oh, my God. Where were they in Mexico, not Cancun?
As far as I know, they were all over.
All over. Well, let me tell you what people ought to do in this country. I've been doing it for years. If you go into a deli, for example, I don't care what the person looks like, and they make a sandwich without a pair of new gloves, walk out. Don't be shy. I say to them, put a pair of gloves on. They don't like it. You know what I say? I can't say it. I was going to give you an Italian phrase from the old world, and I'm not Italian. I can give it to you in 15 languages. There's also a hand gesture if they don't like it. You're going to let a man or a woman make a sandwich for you that you put in your mouth with their hands? Forget the flu. Forget the flu. The guy could have just gone in the toilet. I go in restaurants, in delis. They don't use a glove. I say, excuse me, put a pair of gloves on. I love when they put the gloves on, and then they use a cash register. They wipe their behind, and they still have the gloves on. I say, no, take those off. You're going to get a new pair of gloves. And if they get nasty with me, I'll say, put those new gloves on right now, or I'm calling the health department right now. And not only will you lose your job, you'll be deported. Johnson, put the gloves on. You got to be more like my Aunt B. She was the one who went into a butcher shop, and when he pulled out the steak and he said he'll go in the back and grind it for her, she put on an overcoat in July in order to make sure that he really ground up the steak and he didn't give her the old meat that was sitting on the shelf, because that's what Moish the Butcher used to do in Springland, New York. So don't think this is limited to a specific ethnicity. There are crooks and criminals in all ethnicities and all walks of life. It's been going back since the scales were measured by the government in ancient Rome, because they knew people were robbing people with faulty scales. On the Savage Nation today was the global warming skeptic, barred from the United States Congress by Obama, and the man with overly large nostrils, Waxman, who looks very much like the new strain of flu being brought into the United States. We could call it the Waxman flu, but instead it's being called the swine human avian virus. I don't know what they're calling it yet. We could rename it affectionately the Waxman flu. It's broken out in Mexico. It's breaking out in America. It's come from Mexico. The fact of the matter is common sense would slam the border shut like an iron curtain until this stops. But the liars at the CDC are saying, oh, well, once an epidemic spreads, there's no point in containing it. You can't contain it. That is absolutely, that's a total lie. It's total rubbish. In fact, the first rule of containing an epidemic is to stop the spread of the epidemic at its source. You certainly don't let the people swarm across the border who may have the flu, do you? Yes, you do if you're Janet Napolitano. Her job at DHS is not to protect America, but to protect the interests of others.
Savage.
Girls. There's another big topic, which is the increasing Sovietization of America under the vermin called Democrats. The lying, the biggest liar in the history of America is Al Gore. Al Gore was asked to testify today before Congress, and there was a global warming skeptic who was an advisor to Margaret Thatcher who was scheduled to speak at this hearing, and he was blocked by that vermin, Henry Waxman, the man with the spread-out nostrils from sticking his nose in latrines. Waxman said no to any debate on global warming in order to permit this monster, Al Gore, to put out his lies in our Congress. I want to talk about immigrants and epidemics for a moment on the Savage Nation, because while we can debate global warming, it's not affecting you at all since it's a myth and a lie. However, this new influenza A virus is potentially fatal. I will tell you that right now. There should be no trade and no travel between Mexico and the U.S. If we lived in saner times, the borders would be closed immediately. We wouldn't worry about money. We wouldn't worry about making sure that the heroin addicts get their fixes tomorrow. We wouldn't worry about the fact that stockbrokers in New York won't get their snow tomorrow. What we'd be worried about is the public health. But since we no longer have a public health department in America, since the CDC has long been compromised and has become anything but a public health agency, more like a, there's no longer a public health agency. Public safety is the last thing on its agenda. The most important thing is the gay agenda and making certain that nobody talks about AIDS. But the CDC now is saying it's too late to contain. They're lying through their rotten skirts. It is never too late to contain an epidemic. Never. If you study the history of epidemics and you know the source of an epidemic, the first thing you do is you cut off any travel to that source of the epidemic. You don't say it's too late to contain it. That makes no sense, logically or medically. But we've talked enough about this. You've heard me say that I feel Janet Napolitano should step down. The release of the latest security assessment and her failure to retract or even apologize for what she's done is a slap in the face of our nation. People are listening. Congress is reacting. I filed a lawsuit against her. Go to michaelsavage.com and see the lawsuit. Joining in on this is Dr. Robin McPhee, a physician, medical toxicologist, and author of the book Toxicoterrorism. She has written an article for Family Security Matters entitled, Is Napolitano Up to the Task of Keeping Americans Safe? Dr. McPhee, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, good afternoon, Dr. Savage. It's a privilege to be back on your show again.
You also feel that Napolitano is not up to this job.
Well, based upon her prior work in Arizona and recent efforts as Secretary of Homeland Security, unfortunately, the short answer is no. But let's discuss it further and talk about the critical and all-important issues of Homeland Security. As you know, Michael, I've spent most of my career in preparedness, from weapons of mass destruction, search and rescue, all hazards threats, hurricanes, even though I specialize in WMDs. And as a preparedness professional, it really concerns me when the head of domestic security, one of the most important cabinet positions in the United States and charged with protecting the citizens of our country, doesn't act like the leader of a domestic security organization. Instead of focusing on important issues that need remedy and can be repaired with some leadership, things that have been broken since 9/11, she implements policies that have nothing to do with security. Consider her recent actions. Secretary Napolitano spends more time looking like the head of the Red Cross. She just recently passed out, $200,000 to food banks. Is that really what we want our head of security to be doing? Or her latest censorship as an editor, redacting the words terrorist and terrorism from our preparedness playbook? I know actions speak louder than words, but weak words betoken weak performance. You know, she's now forced the term man-caused disasters. That's not just eliminating the word terrorism to be replaced by man-caused disaster. It's also a change in the rules of engagement because it's alerting the true preparedness professional under her command that we are now fighting a paper war and we're not really engaged with serious leaders with a firm grasp of the problems that face us. The term man-caused disaster fails to underscore the evil, the intent associated with terrorism. If you can't name it, you can't fight it. I mean, terrorism is just that. It's a willing, planned, executed set of actions to destroy and to kill. But to suggest that, you know, terrorists, whether they're our own homegrown crazies or the imported ones coming through the people pipeline of the southern border, or their gangs or criminals, you know, blowing up a school bus, compare that to a disaster really demonstrates a lack of coherence and a lack of credibility. And if our leaders care more about image and wordsmithing and eliminating offensive words more than examining our vulnerabilities and initiating practical solutions, it's time to find a new director of Homeland Security.
What can we the people do?
We need to be empowered as a public. And one of the ways we can be empowered as a public is to realize each and every one of us, and obviously, Michael, your audience is pretty empowered, they're active, they're interested. Democracy doesn't end at the ballot box. That's where it begins. I mean, every elected official has an expiration date. It may be 2 years, 4 years, or 6 years. but we can call in that expiration date, or in the interim, we can work with our elected officials and express our concerns, our congressmen, our senators. We can write, we can visit. You know, there's a rule of 10 by 10, 10 emails, 10 letters, 10 people starts getting attention. You multiply that by 10, you've got serious critical mass to get your congressman's attention. We need to mobilize, and we need to hold our elected accountable. This has nothing to do with partisan politics. Homeland Security doesn't protect just the Democrats or the Republicans or the centrists. We, the people, whether we're from the far left, the far right, or the middle, have a big stake in making sure our country is safe. Now, we can disagree on some of the ways we go about it, and good people have the right to disagree, and we should. That's what a democracy is. But disagreement without vilification. Just because we disagree doesn't mean we're evil. And we have to hold our elected accountable. It is something we have done a very poor job of as a citizenry. But there are times when we do get our elected and we get their attention. For example, President Obama and Janet Napolitano and this administration have twice assaulted people in uniform. The first time was a trial balloon when President Obama suggested that perhaps some of the medical bills from our returning wounded should be paid for by their private insurance. The hue and outcry on that was dramatic. And I think, quite frankly, President Obama didn't expect it. He thought he had a mandate. When Janet Napolitano and DHS tried to vilify veterans as potential extremists, the hue and outcry was huge. And when you consider the mainstream media are not necessarily pro-military, you know that the backlash had to be large to get the president and to get Janet Napolitano's attention. So the voice of the people matters. Respectful dissent is important. And so we need to do three things. We need to watch carefully what our leaders do. We have to ask them very specific questions. How are you going to protect this country? What are your plans for food security? Why have you abandoned the notion of protecting imports or checking all cargo for radiologic material? Why are you going back and forth on policies to protect biosafety level 3 and 4 labs? Why is it has taken 8 years to try to secure easy access radiation materials? What are you doing to enhance preparedness? 80% of our EMS will tell you they don't consider themselves capable of responding to a dirty bomb. So be informed, hold our elected accountable, turn out the vote, speak with our elected, make sure they understand our voice, and at the end of the day, be constantly vigilant for what's going on Capitol Hill, because nothing happens on Capitol Hill that doesn't ultimately trickle down to Main Street USA. And democracy is a participatory sport, and so is preparedness. And neither democracy nor participatory sports like preparedness ever go away, and you can never be on the sidelines. You have constantly got to be in the game.
Thanks, Dr. McPhee. I agree, to protect our country, we have to be ever vigilant, and politicians and politics should not stand in our way of protecting ourselves. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Here to give us an update on what's going on in the House of Representatives is Congressman Steve King from Iowa.
Well, thanks a lot, Michael. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it when we get a chance to discuss these issues of the day. I feel like I've just been the culture warrior here nonstop for the last 3 weeks. And the one that's just behind me is, it's not only behind me, but just temporarily, the hate crimes legislation. It's likely to come to the floor of the United States Congress within the next week or two. And we spent 2 days battling the hate crimes legislation in the House Judiciary Committee. And I am the non-lawyer on the committee, so I tell them I have a decided advantage. I only have to argue one side of the issue, not both. The essence of hate crimes legislation is this. the left, and I mean the hardcore left, and many of them are represented on the House Judiciary Committee, which is the most polarized committee on the Hill. They will argue that there are people out there that commit crimes against others because they hate them for what they think they might do in the privacy of their own home. Hopefully those things are taking place in the privacy of their own home, if they're taking place at all. But what this legislation does, hate crimes legislation, sets up a special protected status for gender, sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation. And those three words are all very troubling to me. More troubling, though, is that it's actually, and I offered an amendment to do this, it's thought crimes legislation, not hate crimes legislation. And I pulled out the book 1984 by George Orwell. He wrote that in 1949 and predicted that by 1984 we would be where we are today on hate crimes legislation. Society didn't devolve quite as quickly as George Orwell anticipated, but he certainly anticipated the things that are evolving here today with hate crimes legislation. And I have to give this from memory, but I put it into the record. It was this from 1984, which was written in 1949 again, that we don't care about any overt act. We only care about the thought. It's the thought that controls the act. And so we're going to control your thoughts and disregard your overt acts. And he's speaking to Winston in the book. Because once we control your thoughts, we can make you not only think the way we want you to, but do so willingly. That's what's going on here in hate crimes legislation. And I made the argument in the committee that if we believe in preventative medicine, and if you believe that you can figure out what's in someone's head and punish what's in their head, then why do you wait for them to commit a crime? Why don't you just psychoanalyze them and punish them for what's in their, what they thought or what you think they might think, instead of going through this legislation that not only turns on what's perceived to be in the head of the perpetrator, but also what's perceived to be in the head of the victim. Gender, for example, our language in the country has changed from the simple, clear term sex, which anybody can figure out what you are. A doctor might be a more final authority than I would be. But gender is what you think you are, not what you are. Gender identity is your sexual preferences or orientation. That is what you think you are, not what someone else can determine that you are. Sexual orientation is a whole grab bag of different behaviors, and they may not be behaviors, they might just be inclinations. So they would argue that sexual orientation includes heterosexuality and homosexuality, and I don't disagree with that. But it also includes about 28 proclivities, including pedophilia. And the Democrats in the House Judiciary Committee voted to protect pedophiles. They specifically voted to protect pedophiles as one of the special protected classes that would be protected under this hate crimes legislation.
Oh, my God. How could this be going on?
So we have legislation that would identify the overt violent act and then enhance the penalty based upon what is judged to be in the head of the criminal, the perpetrator, and measure that off of what was in the head of the victim who might have a different sexual orientation that was being discriminated against. You know, when I say it, Michael, I know, when I say it, it sounds like gibberish to me. It's because it is gibberish. It's a gibberish way to go at law, and it, you cannot define and punish by thoughts. We can only punish overt acts because we can prove them factually as to whether they actually were committed or not. There's nothing in the federal code that punishes thoughts, and this would be the first thing that does that, although there are enhanced sentencing hearings that do take into account the motive of the perpetrator. And I understand that the city ordinance in San Francisco has made it unlawful to discriminate against the short, the fat, the tall, or the skinny. And, you know, that's an outrageous reach out there. And I know that they have passed legislation out of the California State Senate, and I don't know where it went from there, that would grant an animal the right to get a restraining order against its master. These are the kind of things that brought Moses down from the mountaintop with the tablets, Michael. This is bizarre kind of thinking. And we have, of course, some of the strongest extremists anywhere there in the House of Representatives and the Judiciary Committee on the other side of that aisle.
Well, what in the world is going on with Obama's nominee for Office of Legal Counsel? My God.
This is the office that actually makes legal recommendations to the president, lets him know if he can sign a particular executive order, for example. Would be whispering in the president's ear on an nearly a daily basis. Dawn Johnson is the nominee for the Office of Legal Counsel. She is just an anti-life activist. She has declared pregnant women to be no more than fetal containers.
What?
That's right. No more than fetal containers. And she said that pregnant women are slaves, that they're forced to carry the baby against their will, and it's a violation of the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. She said that a woman who gets an abortion, their only emotion they ever feel is relief. So I have been very actively challenging her nomination and calling upon the Senate to hold up her nomination and to shoot her down and to appoint someone who can get along with the pro-family, pro-life people in this country, someone who isn't so utterly biased that she, and she is, by the way, a former attorney for the National Abortion Rights Action League, who call themselves NARAL right now. So you know that she's a pro-abortion activist, and she would be writing precedent decisions that have the impact of precedent unless the court should overrule them. That's Dawn Johnson. I understand Senator Ben Nelson in Nebraska has come out and said he's withholding his support for her confirmation. That's a good start. If we keep up the pressure, Dawn Johnson can go back to some part of the, hopefully the private sector or into retirement for all of me, Michael.
What's happening with homosexual marriage in Iowa?
Last April 3rd, the Iowa Supreme Court came down with a ruling that wiped out Iowa's Defense of Marriage Act. And since Iowa doesn't have a residency requirement, that means that this turns Iowa into the mecca for same-sex marriage. That means that we have, all across this country, we have same-sex couples that are planning their pilgrimage to Iowa in order to get married under Iowa laws, and then they will go back home to their home states. And according to a UCLA study, getting good information out of California, I think, this time, but according to a UCLA study, there would be, before Iowans could vote on a constitutional amendment, it would bring about 58,000 same-sex marriages. Now, I think there are about 18,000 that took place in California before Californians got this reversed. We're looking at 58,000 here in Iowa before Iowa could even vote. And of that, 95% would be from out of state, according to the UCLA study. So, you know, we've got to do something here in the state. As we speak, I'm here in the Iowa legislature taking a little bit of a break from Congress to help push the idea that we can pass a residency requirement with reciprocity so we don't marry people that would come from California into Iowa to the same-sex couples who would be in violation of the state of their residence laws on marriage. If we can do that, we can respect the decisions made in each of the other states. And I've just put it this way, that Iowans should not do unto other Americans that which the Iowa State Supreme Court has done unto Iowans. For that reason, we need a residency law with reciprocity. These state representatives and state senators need to hear that from across the country. Pass a residency law, shut off 9%, 95% of the same-sex marriage in this state, move the constitutional amendment as quickly as possible. That would still be 2011 in a special election at the earliest. So we have our work cut out for us, Michael.
Thanks, Congressman King. I think it's time that judges and lawmakers hear the will of the people.
Savage.